We are mothers in a satanic age. But it is not too late to fight back. Will you join us?
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 533 for the week of October 21st, 2024. I am my grandmother, David T. Cole, and I'm here with rock peasant Sarah D. Bunting.
More like Exit Sandman.
Pure evil witness Tara Ariano.
Oh yeah, there it is.
And dabbler in the Smurf dark arts, Pamela Ribbon.
Smurfette's made with a lump of clay, half a pack of lies, and a serpent's tongue. Google it.
Welcome to Extra Hot Great for another week. Joining us, she is a writer. She is the co-host of our sister podcast, Listen to Sassy. You've heard her with us here before. It's Pamela Ribbon.
Pam Lee.
Thanks, everybody.
We are here to talk about Hysteria, in which the year is 1989, when high school football star Ryan Hudson, Brandon Butler, goes missing and a pentagram is painted on his parents' garage door. Dylan Campbell, MJ Anthony, gets an idea. Riding the wave of Happy Hollow, Michigan's satanic panic could drive interest in his metal band, Death Crunch, and it definitely intrigues Dylan's crush, Judith, Jessica Tresca. But what seems like harmless fun with black nail polish and a pet collar quickly escalates as the town's paranoia focuses on Dylan as a suspect in Ryan's disappearance. Matthew Scott Kane, formerly of the ABC family show Stitchers, created Hysteria. All 8 episodes dropped last Friday on Peacock. We will be careful about spoilers past the pilot. Let's do the Chen check-in. Pam, should our listeners watch Hysteria?
Oh, yeah.
Perfect answer, Sarah.
I'm not mad if you do, but no.
Dave?
I'm going to give this one a pass. Just like I give Satan a pass.
Oh. I mean, I know that's not true, but I'm going to probably keep watching, but that doesn't necessarily mean anyone else should. Let's get into it. Pam, I'm going to start with a question. Our Listen to Sassy crossover fans will also want to know, how big a crush would 1989 Pam have had on Dylan?
This tone makes it hard.
Mm-hmm. Go on.
Hard or but not impossible, right? I mean,
not impossible.
Okay, good.
Not impossible. There's not a lot of depth in it yet. Right. So there's nothing in there for me to latch on to.
Or depth.
That's right.
Okay.
That you heard correctly. Two P's. Not enough there, right?
Mm-hmm.
This tone is tough because it's like Yellow Jackets meets Wonder Years meets Guitar Hero. And so the Wonder Years part of it is not catching me.
Mm-hmm.
He's just too clean.
Oh, okay.
Got to roll in the mud for a while to get Pam going.
Okay, but wait, then I have to ask, would you be more interested after he carved a pentagram in his hand?
It did get more intriguing.
Fucking knew it. I mean, Sarah, same question, although I feel like I know the answer.
I mean, the less Deppy, the better.
That's okay.
By which I mean I'm trying to clear that lane for Pam.
Right.
Also, was not my thing. I was an Aoki guy. We'll get into it later in the episode. This was like, it had a bunch of ingredients that I was like, this should be a tasty dish that I want to eat more of.
Yep, on paper.
But the tone just kept like flipping between scenes, and certain scenes seemed like the actors were not aware that there were other parts of the story that were happening in the same town, which is a script problem or a directing problem. Like, it was not coherent, by which I don't mean incoherent. It just was like all over the place. And even though it was a fake out, like, don't roll an orange cat and a pocket knife onto your set and expect me to hang, because you can't do it. But yeah, there were also some like anachronistic things in the dialogue that, if it had been a little more tonally consistent and knew kind of what it wanted to do instead of being the mashup Pam mentioned, that wouldn't have bothered me, but it wasn't, so it did.
More like lamer things.
Not quite there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go, dude. Mm-hmm.
There's
self-high five was that clap you heard, everybody.
Yeah.
Yep. There's a scene where after Dylan has given himself like the more metal makeover and he's like got the stupid, I don't, and that might be a cat collar that he's wearing.
It's such
a
definitely an animal.
Yeah, yeah, so I think he's, it is.
His friends in the band come to pick him up and they're like, get a look at him. And then we smash cut to them in the car and they're both like laughing so hard what he's trying to do. And it's like, that's the show I want to watch. Like that's, mm-hmm, but that's not kind of the show that it is.
It spoke to something about that era that was true. Like yes, that was their makeup was, as we see in the first episode, was like Kiss, right? Mm-hmm. And I just would like to see a heavy metal band that sort of embraces the WWF of it all.
Yes.
Where you have, he's the businessman, right? You know, like, oh, the businessman. And he's up there with the band that's dressed like Kiss, but he's got like a 3-piece suit on because he's like the businessman.
Sure.
I kind of wanted that stupidness out of this, mm-hmm, show, because like on paper, I think Sarah was sort of saying the same thing. On paper, I felt like I was going to like it.
Yeah.
But then when you get there, it's like the least of everything everybody's been like the most boring parts of all the math equation shows that we've been talking about so far in it. I was throw Stranger Things in there as well, because it's sure, yeah, an 80s throwback. For all the reasons I didn't like Stranger Things, nailing the Spielbergian 80s of it all was not a fault among them. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And this show doesn't really even get that right in a lot of spots.
Yeah.
Like what they're trying to pull off, if this is it, like this was the benefit of the doubt I gave. The kids are just like in a high school coming of age show. Mm-hmm. And the adults are actually in an 80s horror movie of their own imagination because of Satanic Panic and there. Yeah. But also there, yeah, is someone killing people. That's so fun. But because the shift was so great, that it's like these guys are in a locker, by the lockers, having a very awkward fake conversation about going to a cool party or whatever, that I don't believe them for a, yeah, while. Mm-hmm. So I can't believe what's happening in the basement at all. Is she dead? Like, yeah, you know what I mean? Like, they destroyed her.
Well, and I think they're also trying to, I mean, satirizing Satanic Panic is not what they're maybe trying to do, but I think they are gesturing at the idea that this is one of those things where a parody of Satanic Panic looks just like Satanic Panic did, because it was, yeah, so like
absurd. Yeah.
Floridly fucking corny and, yep, remains that way, that, mm-hmm, it's difficult to do that. But then they're also kind of gesturing at the fact that like this was really serious, and this and many other witch hunts of, you know, varying flavors, including the originals, destroyed hundreds of lives,
yeah,
and again continued to do that through the 20th century and more recently, I guess. But like, I don't think this is a show that has the guns for that, mm-hmm, kind of storytelling. Like, you've got to keep it on the funny side of the,
yeah,
premise, and like, okay, mention Tipper Gore and then move on to another, like, just keep it to jokes. But, mm, yeah, I don't know,
you're writing it in 2024. So,
yeah,
you know, embrace the benefit of hindsight. Like, we lived through it. We lived through the fucking Geraldo special reports on it. And as I was saying up the top, my grandmother forbidding me to go to my sister's house because she was playing Dungeons and Dragons with her friends that night.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that was the gateway. You know, that was like a big one. That was a big no-no.
Okay, yeah, but that one is true.
That Dungeons and Dragons will lead, yes, you to worshiping Satan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
Worshipping Satan and spending a lot of money on accessories, which is maybe the same thing. But the first episode does so much table setting that isn't supernatural. And then at the last 3 minutes of it, they're like, okay, here comes the supernatural of it all, mm-hmm, which I was wondering if that was even going to happen at that point, which was like, oh, you waited too long. You thought you were doing something with a better lead up than you performed. And I was like, I was ready to bail on it. And then at the end of the first episode, some supernatural entities just throwing Julie Bowen around like a rag doll.
Yeah.
And that's when I knew Tara was in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Except they didn't finish the job. So I don't know. Maybe that's when Tara was out. She's like, oh, it's alive. Fuck this.
But if they called the show Chuck and Julie Bowen around, I mean, I think it might have done better.
Okay. But that leads to my next question for Pam. Like her character, Linda, Pam, you're also a mother who's supportive of your child's artistic pursuits. Are you concerned now that this is going to happen to you if you're continuing to be supportive of your child?
I'll get thrown around by the great overlord of TikTok one day. That's going to happen.
We can only aspire.
I do think that Anna Camp is having a great time. Mm-hmm. And that felt like, I was like, this is the role that I would have been like, okay, I'm doing this. That mm-hmm. seems like a lot of fun, this part.
Who does she play?
She's the other mom. She's the one mm-hmm. who's the voice we heard. Yeah. At the, in
who's
the
clearly the reason. I mean, I haven't seen past episode one, but they were going to watch that she's done this to the town to teach them a lesson about the Satan, right?
I did watch ahead, and that is not where I think it's going with her character. I'll just say that. But I do think her character is going somewhere interesting.
When she welcomed home her baby girl at the end, I just assumed that meant she's the reason that all of this is happening. But you're saying no.
Oh, well, in a sense, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. That's all I'll say.
That's all we'll say.
The show has other disturbing elements as well. Sarah, talk about the chill you got when you heard that Linda's dress from Montgomery Ward was going to take 5 weeks to be delivered. I know. 5 Earth weeks.
Down from 6 weeks.
I know.
Oh my God. This is how we lived. These, like, the rituals of, like, here is the Land's End catalog. Mm. Here is the Land's End catalog with each member of the family's specific individual dog ear. Mm-hmm. Here is the sending of the check to the Land's End headquarters. And then the waiting begins, and then it shows up and you forgot what you ordered and hate it. But yeah, that was like, you can't get it here tomorrow? Yeah. Why? And also Montgomery Ward, my God. I always forget that that's not like just a random reference, like rotary phones. Like, it really was a thing.
It was real. Speaking of real, I'm going to go back to Pam. Did the specific mentions of the satanic messaging in the Smurfs and Thundercats remind you of particularly outlandish fear-mongering in your youth? Because I know you were living, like, in the Bible Belt at this time.
I mean, the Smurfs are pagans. Like, she's just right about the Smurfs.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
I did not have to get into the Thundercats of it all, nor did any, I wasn't anywhere near Dungeons and Dragons, so this stuff didn't happen. It was all music. It was all Guns N' Roses and Ozzy Osbourne and Prince. Geraldo did make my mom, he made my mom take my Prince tape. She took it because she heard from Geraldo it was really bad for
did
you.
Did you ever get it back?
I don't remember. I'm sure I went and got it back because she forgot.
Good for you.
That makes sense.
It's at the bottom of a baptismal font in Katy, Texas.
It's my fault for asking a follow-up question when she said, have you listened to this album? And she didn't know any of these songs at all. It's not like Geraldo played them. So then she was like, what's going on with this album? And I said, well, it's really only the second side that has songs that are a little more controversial. So can I listen to the first side still that has like Let's Go Crazy on it and stuff? And she was like, what's on the second side? And I was like, well, there's a song. What does masturbation mean?
Oh,
and she took the tape.
Yeah.
I mean, you're right.
Did you
that
ever
is
find
what
it?
You get.
Rookie mistake.
Why do you think I've done all these podcasts? It's going to come up at some point.
Oh, what do you learn? It's going to blow your mind, Pam.
Now you know.
I can't wait.
Speaking of font, you can't use the I'm John Carpenter movie fonts when you're doing something like this, because you are comparing yourself, therefore, to John Carpenter, and no.
Thank you.
Definitely not. So get that font out of here. I know what they were doing. This is basically like, Peacock, give me Stranger Things, please. And they're like, how about this? And they're like, what does Stranger Things took the Stephen King font, and they did their thing with it. What do we got? John Carpenter font? No, you can't do it. Mm-hmm. You can't do it.
No. Pam, we invited you to come on today. We haven't even talked about him yet. You said you love Bruce Campbell. He plays the local police chief in this show.
Bruce Campbell.
Is this the kind of thing you want to see him doing now?
Oh, it just feels like he's got to sign autographs while we're watching the pilot. Like, that's what he's here for.
Yep. Yeah.
It's the Comic-Con. You know, what is it that Stan Lee says? Excelsior.
Yeah.
Of the show. And it's like an approval moment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He is the Patton Oswalt of throwback horror movies. What do you got? I'm here. I'll do it.
Mm-hmm. He is. But then when he was like, oh, my granddaughter, Judith, and she's the crush, I was like, grandchild, no! old, but he is old. We are all old, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. Anyone else that stood out in the cast? We've already touched on Anna Camp and my enemy, Julie Bowen. Yes, Dave?
Speaking of the granddaughter, she's got really great I'm fucking crazy eyes.
She does. She's really good
at that. The scene that Sarah was talking about with the cat.
Yeah.
There is a moment where she is egging him on to kill the cat, and she's got the fucking craziest face.
Yeah.
She really sold that she is very much into all of this.
Yep.
And her eye makeup is 100% on point.
Yep.
I will say, parts of this 80s, they're not just gesturing at, like the main Death Crunch kids could be in any time, kind of.
Yeah.
And okay, well, here's my final question for the group.
Yeah.
If Death Crunch is a serial,
oh my God,
what does it consist?
I was just thinking, my last question is going to be, what's a better name, Magic Spoon or Death Crunch?
What's in Death Crunch?
Well, it's like Lucky Charms, except it's like unlucky stuff.
Mm.
Right? Skulls.
Yes.
Little sixes, three of them glued together.
Severed penises.
Yeah, I think in my Death Crunch, there's teeth, baby teeth.
Oh, baby teeth.
Yes, mm-hmm.
That's in Death Crunch.
Yeah,
yes.
That's what makes it so crunchy.
Teratomi.
It's full day supply of calcium in your Death Crunch.
That's right. It's regular cereal, except there's a giant teratoma in it with like an eyeball. That's like, yeah, everybody hopes they get the teratoma.
Ooh, a knuckle.
All right, it is time for Round the Dial. Our first stop, as always, is Tara. Tara, what have you been watching on TV recently?
Well, speaking of goth style, What We Do in the Shadows is back for its sixth and final season. In the past, finales have set up the arc for the season that would follow, like Guillermo finding out he's a Van Helsing descendant, Colin Robinson dying and being reborn, Guillermo secretly getting his friend Derek to turn him into a vampire, as one does. In the season 5 finale, everything just kind of got fixed. Nandor forgave Guillermo for going behind his back to Derek. He reversed Guillermo's vampirism, which Guillermo realized he wanted. The reversal required Nandor to kill Derek, but even that got sort of fixed when Guillermo and Laszlo brought Derek to the Necromancer to be revived as a zombie and hang out with Topher and the other zombie bros. So without the usual cliffhanger pointing toward a season arc, the first three episodes of season 6 are kind of disconnected. The premiere introduces Jerry the Vampire, who's played by Mike O'Brien, the creator of AP Bio. The vampires remember he used to be their fifth roommate before Guillermo came along, which reminds them they were supposed to wake him up on New Year's Eve 1996. So when he gets up, he's pissed about the years he missed, and also that they have not done anything about their supposed project of conquering the new world. Which, fair, we haven't heard much about that since season 1 either. Guillermo's trying to have a little independence by moving into the garden shed and getting a job at Panera, although he quickly changes careers and enters the world of finance. That is the second and, I would say, the best of the first three episodes. Nadia and Nandor infiltrate the office to try to help Guillermo climb the ladder, and Nadia's impression of Melanie Griffith in Working Girl pre-makeover is very funny. The posters for the season are all themed to the hobby that Laszlo rediscovers in the premiere, which is trying to create life from dead tissue. And then when everyone says, like Frankenstein, pretending he doesn't know what that is. Having this also become an interest of Colin Robinson's, not only because he and Laszlo have a different bond since Colin Robinson's recent re-childhood, but also because he likes the idea of creating a new person who will want to be his friend, is about as close to a sweet and tender story as this show gets. It is sad the show's ending, because overall it's been one of the funniest shows on TV. Even an episode that is a B-4, What We Do in the Shadows, has at least 10 extremely solid jokes. And the only reason you have to mark it down is because it's set such a high bar of quality for itself in general. And I'm sure all these great writers and actors have different goofy shit they want to do, and I'll be happy to follow them wherever and whatever that is. I don't know any spoilers for the season at all. They're running out of time to write a funny one-off role for Jamie Demetrio from Stav Let's Frats. It's impossible to say that.
Yeah.
They're running out of time to write a funny one-off role for Jamie Demetrio, who is from Stav Let's Flats. He is also the brother to Natasha Demetrio, plays Nadia. I'll be extremely disappointed if we don't see him at all in season 6. Good show is still good. Now it is on FX Monday nights and wherever you dirty fucking cord cutters find it on the internet after that. None of my business.
Wow.
I reviewed it for Cracked. You can find that link in the show notes.
Huh. All right, Pam, what do you got?
That's how I feel, and I've been on the record with that.
Sure.
Sure.
You want to see something actually scary? It's menopause.
I'm here to recommend a show that you have to go to BritBox for. It's called The Change. Season one is there from last year, and they're making season two right now. So this is a great time to watch this. The show is created by Bridget Christie. She was new to me because I don't watch a lot of BritBox stuff. It's absolutely charming and a lot of fun. The character has an existential crisis at 50, learning that she's making the change. So she gets on her old motorcycle and goes on a pilgrimage around her old haunts in the Forest of Dean. It's very funny. It's very charming. She is like fed up with her husband. She's like putting all of her microaggressions in it. I don't really want to spoil it too much. But the way that it unfolds and like, I don't like whimsy. And so this is like that perfect line of, it's not whimsy. It's this fucking shit. It's crazy. it's crazy about the change. And I'm really glad they're going to make another season of it. I love it.
Pam, where are you on the internet? People can hear you more, read the stuff you do, more about dark Smurf magic.
Well, it's mostly Listen to Sassy is where I'm mostly on the internet, and sometimes I go to Instagram at Pamela Rubin.
Who's your favorite co-host on Listen to Sassy?
That is a two-way tie.
Wow.
Between yourself and Dave?
No.
All right, Sarah, what have you been watching?
I watched Woman of the Hour, finally. Folks, we have found it, a feature that should have been a feature and is a feature. This is Anna Kendrick's long-awaited take on the dating game killer case. It's been out there at festivals actually for like a year and just arrived at Netflix last week. But take on the dating game killer case kind of misstates what it is if you're looking for just like another scripted overview of the case file. This is maybe not for you, but what it is one of the more economical and affecting illustrations of risk assessment that women have to do all the time, every day, so that situations don't turn into capital B bad scenes and we don't get killed. And that making nice and trying to make men happy so that we don't get murdered sometimes gets us murdered anyway. And yet she manages to do all of this. It's extremely well acted by her and the entire rest of the core. She manages to do this in a way that is not like depressing. I mean, it's infuriating, but it's not depressing because she makes you feel recognized. And it's also not grisly, but again, very well acted by everyone. Production designed with great care. I am absolutely anachronistic parking lot cop. Where it's like, that's a minivan, that's not happening in 1974, and absolutely flawless parking lot work to the edges of every frame, looks very 70s. It is on Netflix, I recommend it, and I reviewed it at bestevidence.fyi, where I also have reviewed one of Aaron Lee Carr's gazillion projects that was out last week. My writing partner Eve Beatty reviewed the Grey's Anatomy Fraudster series, which she liked, that was also on Peacock, so give it a look. That's bestevidence.fyi, and link is in the show notes.
Same question to you, Sarah. Who is your favorite Listen to Sassy host?
Dara.
Oh,
hey!
Wow.
Answer. Good answer. Good answer.
Burn
good
answer. Good answer. Look, I mean, I knew it wasn't me, but damn.
Her check cleared.
Yeah.
All right, here's what's coming up on Extra Extra Hot Great this Friday. It is the October Forcening Pool, and it's the Paul Lynde Halloween special.
Oh, God.
Boy, I'm looking forward to this one. I don't know anything about it except kisses in it, and I saw the main graphic that we're using, and I'm already in the bag for it. So I hope it lives up to my expectations, as high as they are. You can listen to that if you are a club member. Go to extrahotgreat.com/club for more info and to sign up. And when you're there, like, holy shit, is this actually your site? Yes, it is. It's been freshly redesigned. We've got some new features. We've got transcripts of new episodes moving forward. We've got contributor credits on things that you submit. So go check it out. See all the shiny newness there at extrahotgreat.com. And then come back here next week on EHG Prime. All right, there's a show Amazon's doing. It's called Buy It Now. And you're like, well, you shouldn't cover that because it's part of the problem. No, we are going to cover it because it sounds like the stupidest thing ever. And we're welcoming back Andy Dennert for that one. He's rebooked and he's super jazzed that we're talking about this Amazon reality show. I'm sure.
Pam, 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 Pam.
Perfect.
That music can only mean one thing. It is time for the Pammon. It's not quite the canon. It's the Pammon. And what is the Pammon, you ask? Well, it's like the canon, but instead of making the case for if it is good or not, we're just going to discuss whether this is good TV for Pam. And in particular, the way I'm going to attack it is this good TV for Pam circa 1990? You could bring your own methodology into it. We're not going to be sticklers for that, but that's how I'm approaching today's effort, which is 21 Jump Street, Season 4, Episode 23, How I Save the Senator. Let me roll through the show for you. We open with a live news bulletin from Catherine Moorhead about an attempted assassination of a senator that was thwarted by the undercover officers of the Jump Street program. She tracks him down, and after some drama with a news camera threatening to record their precious undercover faces, Catherine Moorhead reveals she's not here for a news scoop. Oh, no. She's here to get the real story behind today's assassination attempt because she wants to write a movie about it. And that turns all the heads of all the 21 Jump Street people, and they are energized by this. Each member of the gang, in turn, this is the whole show, recounts the events of the assassination attempt, casting themselves as the hero. A little bit Rashomon, but there is a cherry on top of this conceptual sundae. Since they are basically pitching a movie writer, each story is told with a genre baked in, a movie genre ready to go. The first is Harry Truman, played by Justin Gwynn. And you have to remind yourself, this is 1990. Yet, 5 years after Michael Winslow did the unnecessary language overdub thing in Police Academy 2, their first assignment, 21 Jump Street is also in on it with this kung fu movie take on the events of the day, in which a gang of Chinese pastry chefs infiltrate the catering team and try to plant a bomb in a giant sheet cake.
From a dark corner, I watched as they marched through the kitchen. The old man carefully placed the cake box on a counter, and his men quickly surrounded him. Danger and fear raced through my veins, and evil hung in the air like a beer belched in a telephone booth.
There's a big kinetic fight after this. It is poorly directed, but nevertheless, Dustin Gwynn is bringing the goods as his Bruce Lee-esque character here. It doesn't hurt that he is keeping it toit.
The toitest.
Harry corners the Lee pastry chef, who turns out to be his hated childhood sensei type of character. They fight, and when Harry roundhouses him into his own cake, he explodes gooily. So what about the Pam of it all for our first segment? Well, Dustin does a pretty good Bruce Lee, as I said, and he is easy on the eyes. The comedy is stale, but he manages to pull it off. So even though this is the most awkward of all the segments that we're going to be seeing today, I still think it's not bad. And by the way, if you want to see more Dustin Gwynn, check out Warrior.
Yeah. Because
he's in that too, and he's really great in that.
Mm-hmm.
Catherine, that's her movie writer, exasperated, asks if anyone else could give the real story. At which Pam's super crush, Johnny Depp as Tom Hansen, delivers what I believe is our first true Pam-worthy moment when he clears his throat, somehow while eating, and grins confidently and points to himself repeatedly while he finishes his food. I think Pam is into this for some reason. He says, words can't describe what happened. And then, I shit you not, there's a 7-minute Charlie Chaplin silent film homage to the whole assassination attempt in prime time. On a show for teens, 7 minutes out of 42 are this black and white scratchy silent film.
Mm-hmm.
Tara, you had some historical conjecture about this, which I think is worthy to bring up at this point.
I did. I was curious to know when Robert Downey Jr. was cast in the movie Chaplin. So I found out Richard Attenborough had started working on it 2 years before this episode aired. He got the rights to the whatever biography he used in 1988. And Robert Downey Jr. has said he was 25 when he started prepping for it, which would possibly line up with the dates here that, like, maybe Johnny Depp was potentially in the mix and was like, hey, write me this crazy thing so that I can show I can do it. Because Robert Downey Jr. turned 25 in April 1990.
Yeah.
So it could be.
And Johnny Depp also was looking to leave the show.
He sure was.
So this might keep you around a little longer.
Yes, by any means necessary. Buy Boxcar, buy another role, by putting him into a carton and sending him to another country. Yes.
I read that this may have been his last episode. even though it didn't air that way.
Yeah, that's right. It might have been the last one he filmed, but not the last one that aired. Yeah, that's what I read too.
Yeah.
So getting back to this Charlie Chaplin thing, obviously I have no clips for you for this one, but there in this segment, there's an anarchist.
The clips aren't silent. The clips aren't silent.
So there's this anarchist, he's called the Mustache, and Depp's character is the waiter, and he bumbles his way through the discovery and disposal of the Mustache's cartoonish spy versus spy style round TNT bomb. All this happens while he's trying to gain the attention of Mary, one of the beautiful guests of the event. It's surprisingly well done, and I don't mean it's perfect or anything like that. But considering the market they're going for and how they could have just phoned this in, it's actually pretty good in a bewilderingly competent way.
Yeah, as an homage, it's extremely authentic. Like, it does seem like a real silent movie.
Yeah, I agree. Like, just down to the fact that, like, nitwit is two words in one of the dialogue cards, and that the top of the scroll at each dialogue card has the initials JS at the top. Like, and I was primed to find this segment repellent in its self-regard, which it, I mean, there's plenty of self-regard, but it's mostly earned. Like, it is shocking that they attempted any of this. And I found myself being like, fine, this is pretty good. Like, right down to the just sort of corkscrew of hair sticking off of Depp's head. Like, I don't want to like this, but I have to because he did a really good job.
I was surprised, but then, like, the capper for me is right at the end where the captain comes in and he's a Keystone Cop and they all do this Keystone Cop legs bent jump thing. And it was just like, I don't know, a lot of little details in the silent film segment that didn't need to be there, but they went for it. And somebody's a labor of love. And I think it actually translated pretty good onto the small screen.
I feel like I'm not supposed to give my opinions at all, but I will say that the when he goes back to get the next round of dishes and then they continue again, I genuinely laughed. That
was
that
game. There's a
smashing dishes over each other's head routine between the waiter and the chef, and they go through one stack and then he leaves and grabs another.
Yeah.
So what about the Pam of it all for this one? First of all, Johnny Depp, one of the two big crushes that we'll see in 21 Jump Street for Pam that I know of so far. Just to address the elephant in the room, we're talking about 1990 Johnny Depp here. And 1990 Pam here.
Yes.
Obviously, we're not talking about 2024 Johnny Depp. Thank God.
Why would we?
Why would we? I think a 90s Pam would be into this Charlie Chaplin-esque Johnny Depp as portrayed here. And as a Chaplin audition, not too shabby. I think maybe a few too many I'm a goose eating some grapes motion with his neck that he does in certain scenes. Like, five of those is okay. We didn't need 15 of them in the row, but okay. It's your choice.
It got him Benny and June.
That's going to say, he may have not got the movie, but he got Benny and June eventually. So
he sure
he's
did.
Able to employ everything he learned on 21 Jump Street here. Doesn't get the girl in the end of this segment that he was courting earlier. So I think that's a plus for Pam, because in Pam's brain, that means Johnny Depp's still available. All right, next segment. Judy Hoss, played by Holly Robinson, is in a, I don't know, it's like a 40s-style crime noir, I guess, in which she plays the ingenue spouting rat-a-tat dialogue and all that kind of stuff about drinking and music and whatnot. It has Ray Parker Jr. in it. Jumanji! I can't stop saying Jumanji every time I hear Ray Parker Jr. No, it's not Ghostbusters anymore. It's Jumanji, thanks to the Key and Peele skit about Ray Parker Jr. Holly gets to sing a torch song for a bit before having to transition into her best Walter Ostnack impression doing a polka, because there's an evil accordion player and he has an accordion bomb that he left on the stage and she has to get it out of the room. So that's why she picks it up, starts doing a polka, and then eventually disposes of it. And I think this is a good Pam segment, because I believe in my heart that Pam loves exploding musical instruments. The gang has comments about this.
Oh, I'm sorry. Are you done yet?
Sal.
He's right. Nap time, baby.
Nap time, baby. The next one is one with Sal, as we just heard there. What is Sal's role in 21 Jump Street? Is he just like the...
He's the janitor.
Maintenance guy?
Janitor and cheek inflator in charge.
Okay. This was my favorite segment. Sal is in a very quick high school horror film set almost entirely in a bathroom, but we do get this piece of information before he goes to have a pee.
Come on, Corrine. Everybody knows the stories were a bunch of baloney.
Wilbur Friedman is no baloney.
You're saying there really was a Wilbur?
He was a custodian here my freshman year. Weird guy. He lived in a tool shed out by the athletic field. No one paid much attention to him. Until one day, he took a weed whipper and turned the entire cheerleading squad into hamburger.
Gross.
Gross.
Real Judith from Hysteria.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Evil horniness there.
So he has to pee. The senator has to take a shit. Sal's in the bathroom. The Secret Service comes in ahead of the senator, frisks him while he's actually peeing. And then the weed whacker killer comes in and like weed whacks the senator's stall open. It is so dumb. I loved it. Mm-hmm. Each time we see the killer's face, they just magically add another mask onto him.
Another mask.
So he starts with just wearing a potato burlap sack. And then like there's a pair of goggles over that. And then on top of that is the Jason hockey mask, and then an umpire's mask or like a catcher's mask. Mm-hmm. And then at the end, there's like the Phantom of the Opera half mask, and they're all stacked on top of each other. The guy's having a hard time keeping his head up. Mm-hmm. He's got so many fucking masks on. Yeah. He's got five masks on. And then it just ends at that point. They knew they had to get out. They couldn't top five masks on a killer. And they're just like,
they tried to put Bruce Campbell on the last, and he just fell right off. They had to cut the commercial.
The Pam of it all, I believe she would appreciate the efficiency of a pan horror spoof in the world's brightest bathroom. And I think they pulled it off. Pam's future pen pal, Peter DeLuise, see Listen to Sassy for details, plays Doug Penhall in a James Bond segment in which James Bond is like really dumb and makes me wonder if Peter DeLuise has actually seen a single James Bond film. It's still entertaining, but it like kind of misses the mark as a parody. There's Blowfish, the villain. He has a senator lookalike that they're going to swap in when the bomb goes off so that he can have power in the highest levels. The whole segment is too long, but it does have one great moment for me. It's the way Peter DeLuise chooses to run down a hallway. He's got one hand on his torso, and as he's walking, the other one is like wildly swinging all the way up and all the way down while he's running, and he's running like quarter turned against the grain that he's running. It's so weird. You have to see it to truly appreciate it, but it kind of made me wish, this is like a bit of a backstory, but Pam wrote to Peter DeLuise once and never heard back, and we tried to get a Listen to Sassy to get people to be the street team to get Peter DeLuise to finally answer that letter, or at least contact Pam in some way to let her know that she's valid, her feelings about Peter DeLuise back in the day were valid, and he's here for her now. That didn't happen, but seeing the way he ran down that hall, it kind of gave me a little crush on Peter DeLuise. Like, playing him as a dopey lunk isn't a bad thing. Mm-hmm. And this is Pam's, I'm going to say it, future pen pal. We're talking about this. So I think there's something really great here for, you know, 1990 Pam. It's something adorkable, if I may borrow a 2019 word about him here that
sure.
I enjoyed.
Yes. The way he sucks his cheeks in also is a choice.
Yes. Thank you.
It reminded me most of all, and I'm one of only two people certainly on this call, possibly in the world, who can say this. It reminded me more of the Richard Grieco film vehicle, If Looks Could Kill.
Mm. Yeah. James Bond.
That's what Jason was Googling while we watched it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So after all this, Catherine, our writer, is dejected. She doesn't think she got the real story, and of course she didn't. Captain Fuller has her talk to a person they arrested at the scene. It doesn't make any sense. He is a astronomy club student, I guess, at the school where this event is taking place. And when the senator's talking about sending some mission to Mars, he's like, I need to protect the future, and like slingshots a water balloon at him. Isn't that the future you want? Don't you want more stuff in space? They don't explain it. Mm-mm. Like, who the fuck cares? But I don't really understand that little beat of the story here. So we learn that this is the actual true story. This is a kid with a water balloon. She is, for some reason, very excited about this storyline. and tapes over all the previous audio she's been taping about everybody's take on the story to hear this kid. And then the captain, at the end of the episode, you know, just being fed up with everything, you know, he was the guy that caught the student who water ballooned the senator. And he hops on a horse in a sheriff's costume to Happy Trails. And that's how the episode ends. It's chaotic. It's weird. It's a really dumb episode of 21 Jump Street. Its reach often exceeded its grasp in a lot of these segments. You know, we're talking about a TV budget. But overall, I think it was fun and dumb. With good-looking guys and major Pam historical crushes, some of which have stood the time better than others. But let's travel back, shall we, to 1990 and see if the panel thinks 1990 Pam would enjoy this piece of television, would deem it Pam-worthy, and let's put it in the Pammon. Who wants to start us off that isn't Pam?
I feel like Sarah should go first since she has the deepest institutional knowledge of 21 Jump Street.
Please, Sarah, start us off.
Yes, I do. And a fair bit of Pamstitutional knowledge as well.
That as well, yes.
I went into this episode knowing that this very likely was done the way it was done because everyone couldn't stand each other. And this was a way to just silo everyone away from one another in terms of the lead actors so that probably Johnny Depp didn't get stabbed in the eye with a sharpened pencil by his co-stars. I'm just spitballing here. So I expected to basically be like watching the runtime clock on this, and I was quite charmed by it. So as a canon episode, I would give it serious consideration, especially since my primary issue with this show at this distance is the extreme self-seriosity of all of the proceedings, but especially Hansen. And I used to recap these occasionally for previously.tv, and that shit started from Jump Street, literally, like in the pilot. He's already being an asshole anyway. But how does this pertain to 1990 Pam? Well, I mean, you have two axes along which this will travel, two or three. There's the crush quotient. There's the humor quotient, and there's the, would 1990 Pam have respected what they were trying to do? The art. Or thought it was pretentious. So that is kind of a murky area. If she's not an Aoki guy, I'm not sure what we can do with the first segment, but I do feel like the Penhall, like, Naked Bond parody was, like, people just, like, being dropped and like accordions flying, like from the previous segment, an accordion flies in. I mean, I feel like that might be Pam Nip. And the silent movie thing, like, I don't know, like if you ever watched those like Buster Keaton shorts that would be on during a baseball rain delay with your dad, and then there is Johnny Depplin being like, look, if you can't insure Robert Downey Jr., I could do this. See? But he actually really could. And the entire production was sort of really lovingly done in each of the segments. Yeah, there's some weak spots. There's some segments that go on too long. But like the mask on a mask on a mask on a mask thing, I think, is right in Pam's wheelhouse.
It's a really good joke.
I think that this is Pammon worthy.
All right.
We're not traveling in the same lane in terms of like crush objects on the show, but I can see her lane from mine. And I think that this is Pammon worthy.
Before we pass to Tara, I do want to say one thing that you reminded me of that I didn't mention in my rundown, which is they actually do a pretty decent job of sprinkling in events from one timeline into the other. My favorite one was the fight from the Kung Fu segment at the first is recreated as a slap fight in the Charlie Chaplin silent film, which I thought was pretty funny.
Yeah.
So, all right, Tara, your take.
On the episode, before we get into the Pammon worthiness, I have to shout out the fact that Judy's segment includes basically a full musical number, which as we've talked about when we considered the moonlighting episode for the canon a few months ago, and we got that from Sybil Shepherd, this is something that would happen with Mary Lou Henner on Taxi as well. certainly with Dixie Carter on Designing Women. Just like leading ladies do be asking producers to write them singing scenes for no reason except that they just want to. And that's something we see less, and I think that's sad. The Elizabeth Gillies of Dynasty, the CW version, tried to bring that back, and I support her.
Didn't she also sing the theme song to 21
Jump Street? Yes, she did.
She did.
Yes. Yes, Holly Robinson, later Pete, not Elizabeth Gillies, who I'm sure was not born yet when this episode aired. Okay, so that said, in terms of the Pam and worthiness of it, I mean, we know this is a... at this point, girl who is going to go on to write Wreck-It Ralph. So I think that she will feel a real affinity with all of the physical comedy in this episode, which is in all of the segments. But in terms of the crushiness, what you want when you are, I'll say, morbidly obsessed with a celebrity is for him to prove and for you to be able to point to.
She's not correcting you.
For you to be able to say, no, he's not just a hunk. He actually has real legitimate acting range. He can do other stuff. And I mean, that's all he wanted to prove with this, too. I'm speaking of Johnny Depp, of course. Did he? But he actually does. Like, he, you know, this is a high bar of difficulty that he has set himself, and he clears it, in my opinion. Like, this is the Charlie Chaplin segment is, I think, the best of the episode. But all of them have their charms. Like, I mean, we keep saying it, but the five masks. It's like a police squad joke. Like, it's so dumb.
Yes, this is what
dumb.
I'm saying. Naked Gun.
Yeah, Naked Gun, exactly. But the rest of them are, I think, all, even the Blowfish one, which, like, certainly there's no reason to think that. And then when they bring him back and are, like, call him Stavros Blowfish, like, that's possibly where this whole episode began, like, making that joke. A Blowfish joke?
I'm actually not mad.
No,
if they
retro-engineered
the whole thing from that joke, it's like, wow. Yes.
Well, that exchange also has the James not Bond listing off all the things that he thinks Blofeld is trying to manipulate world markets with.
Yes.
Gold, diamonds, junk bonds. And there's like this pause. I'm like, oh, my God. But still, I was like, all right, fine.
Yep. No, it's good. The one thing that could have like really topped this episode from what it is if the pastry chef in the silent movie segment who looks so much like Dom DeLuise had been Dom DeLuise, that would have been fun.
Yeah.
But... what they did with what they had and him presumably saying no, I think is very good. And this is the for sure, in my opinion, Pam and worthy. But it's not for me to say.
That the sensei from the first one was one of the gang members from Back to the Future 2 on the hoverboards, I learned.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Oh, one other thing, Sarah, the kid who with the water balloon is fucking Brandon Walsh's bookie from West Beverly High from 90210.
Oh, shit. I thought I recognized him from an earlier episode of Jump Street where I thought he had played a bookie, but it was a different guy. Speaking of 90210, James Whitmore Jr. directing the shtees.
Yes, hello. He did.
That was a spinoff of 21 Jump Street, Bookie.
Writer Gary Rosen, who you're all complimenting with the jokes, presumably, wrote an episode of Beverly Hills 90210.
Oh, which one?
Scared Very Straight, Season 4, Episode 30, 1994.
Oh, is that Magical Drug Toilet?
That's Magical Drug Toilet.
Interesting.
Magical Drug Toilet?
I believe.
Pam, you've heard everybody's take on it, but the one that really counts is yours, because you're Pam.
Thanks.
So, Pam, if you're able to both tell us today and via 1990 Pam what you thought about this episode.
I wrote down first... Dave, did you look for an episode I would hate? I think you did. Like, I just was wondering, how did you get to a foreskening? Like, here's what happened.
Oh, no.
Here's clearly what happened.
Oh, shit.
This is like someone took my fanficky dreams where I would be a woman who walks into Jump Street and needs to get to the bottom of a story where each character has put me in their genre while they tell me that they were actually in a romantic-ish relationship with me at some point. And that's what happened in this, like, intriguing... This is the story I told myself to go to sleep every night underneath my 6-foot Johnny Depp poster. So what's frustrating is... And I was like, and it'd be like a moonlighting episode, you know, with all the, like, antics. And I have that written down, too, in my chaos notes. And what happens then is some boys
take it and they buoy it up, and then you have to go fucking kung fu for 45 minutes, much longer than the Charlie Chaplin stuff. Then you're in a silent goddamn movie where Johnny's not talking. He's doing his thing where he's Edward Scissorweirds. So he's not accessible to you because he's not Johnny Depp. He's not talking. You can't see his Adam's apple. But yes, he's a very good actor. Even here, he's wonderful. Jazz. Then there's just jazz for a while. Yeah. People shitting. Then James Bond, which I've not seen a one of, except if Austin Powers is doing it.
Another thing you have in common with Peter DeLuise.
It's true. Then even just a sheriff at the end to like kick you with some westerns.
That was good, Dave.
Every genre I avoid in one thing. If so, no. 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 For me, no. I would have just been like, God damn it. What a long kung fu segment that was. That was so long.
Well, yeah. Someone repitch this for the Bunyan.
The Bunyan.
Yes.
That doesn't. First of all, someone repitch that name. But really someone repitch this for the Bunyan, because just like freeze framing on a shirtless Harry Truman.
Yeah. No, they all had moments, right? I watched the whole thing. It was still, it was fun. I had a good time as a grown up me. I was able to enjoy it, but I know that 15-year-old me was mad at this episode.
Yeah.
It's like when I watch something that promised to go to space on TV, and it turns out they just went into low orbit for 3 minutes and came back. I feel like this is sort of like that for you, which is like, oh, well, this is just, you promised me this, and then they buoyed it up. Well, they didn't space it up for me. I feel like we're talking the same kind of disappointment.
They could have rom-commed. They could have just done a different kind of antics comedy. You could have had, I don't know, courtroom drama. You could have moved
Johnny Depp in the case of the missing pants. Right, Pam?
Yes. Yeah. That's as long as they travel. I'm fine with it.
Okay, one last note. Maybe this will change Pam's mind. Maybe it won't. But let's give it up for the Shadow Steven-esque cameraman involved. I don't know what that guy was wearing, but damn. Mm-hmm. He was like that, or he's like straight out of Mr. I don't know what was going on there, but that was not a cameraman-looking cameraman.
The Don Johnson heartbeat video.
Yes. Sure.
There was a running, maybe racist joke. I'm just still continuing. that kept going on. We were like, whatever that is going to be, I'm not enjoying. That would have also...
What are you talking about?
The senator is telling some sort of joke about...
Oh, he's telling, yes.
Oh, yeah.
So then the rabbi tells Aunt Jemima, yes, you're right.
Anytime Aunt Jemima is your fourth person walking into a bar. This should not have been in the episode at all. And they just kept coming back to it.
Yes.
Yep. I'm not sure what... Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to give Tara and Sarah a half vote. I'm going to give Pam a full vote. I think that's fair, because it is the Pammon. And we do have Pam here. Maybe one day we'll do the Pam and Pam won't be here. It won't matter. But here we go. Sarah D. Bunting, what say you? Do you think this episode, and you can take Pam's court record into account in your vote. That's not a problem. Do you think this is Pam and worthy or not?
In the case of the missing Pam liking this, I think her objection is sustained. I'm going to vote against it because I think I was surprised enough by enjoying it that I failed to take into account that at that same age, I would have been like, no, okay. Bye.
Yeah, as sometimes happens, a compelling argument has changed my mind, and that argument is Pam saying I fucking hated this episode. So I can't vote it in.
All right.
No, you can't.
Pam, we already know your vote, but let's make it official.
They named her Moorhead. I'm just saying, there's more reasons.
It means it didn't get in.
She's in every fantasy, and yet she never says, that didn't happen. I wasn't there. So then it didn't structurally make sense either. So I'm just going to say that I'm happy you forced me to watch a thing to remember that they got very silly.
Well, but for the record, those characters weren't playing themselves in those segments. They were all over the map. The accordion guy was not the evil guy in each one.
Also, why wasn't her name Moorhead in the James Bond segment?
Moorhead? Yes.
Do we have to do everything?
No, that's
a great
point.
I'm sorry I defended this. Pam, please forgive me.
Guys, we're running out of Sad Hulk music. So that means...
That's a you problem.
For our very first, and probably last, the Pammon... 21 Jump Street, Season 4, Episode 23, How I Saved the Senator. It was looking good for a while, and then Pam, like the senator, came into the room and took a big shit all over it. And therefore, you are not inducted into the extra hot great Pammon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
All right, it is time for the winner and loser of the week. Tara has this week's winner.
Yes, the winner is Slow Horses, renewed for season 6 at Apple TV Plus. Not a surprise. Still great news. What a good show. No one has Apple TV Plus, so no one is watching it. So you people don't realize how fucking good it is. But now Apple TV Plus is available as a Prime Video add-on. So if you want to add it on to your Prime Video subscription, you should. That and Dickinson are the two shows on Apple TV Plus you should absolutely 100% watch. Everything else, meh.
Yeah, that's right? A solid recommendation. Mm-hmm. Sarah, who is our loser of the week?
Tara, for forgetting that Space Show is on Apple TV Plus.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah, yes, right. Space Show.
Of course. Space Show, yes.
Don't say its real name. It's okay. Space Show.
It's Space Show. The actual loser, in addition to Space Show, is Live PD. Staged arrest on that program has now led to a $2.5 million payout to the subject due to civil rights violations committed during it. This is not the only litigation the show is going to have to pay out on, and I'm fine with that. Drag him.
Yeah, shout out to our neighboring county, Williamson, where this happened here in Texas.
Oh, yeah.
That'll get pretty bad. Go from bad to worse. Yeah. Not surprising. All right.
You know what else isn't surprising?
What?
I said speaking of going from bad to worse.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah.
That's it. It's right there, Dave.
Do you know what time it is?
Okay.
Pam.
It's Pam time.
Oh, no. I didn't make a Pam game.
Oh, no.
Shit.
Oh, no.
Oh, boy. All right, guys. This is the 6th game time of the current season. The scores are Tara closing the gap with last week's win. She's got 2. Sarah still looking to get on the board. Value guess at 3. Today, ooh, we are playing the I'm Dumb game from Wrightwood, who earns himself an extra credit, topic of his choosing, plus a free shirt from the Extra Hot Great store at throughmethods.com. Wrightwood explains, IMDb's trivia pages, that's right, it's IMDUMB, are a great way for nerds to learn interesting tidbits about their favorite TV shows. Unfortunately, most of the trivia items are, well, just a little too trivial. In this game, players will hear 3 pieces of trivia taken from a TV show's IMDb page. Players must guess what series the trivia is referring to. 3 points if you guess it after the first piece of trivia, 2 points after the second, 1 point after the third. Guesses can be made after each clue, comma, Sarah. Wrightwood gets it. He knows what the question's going to be. And he was there with the answer before it was even asked.
Mm-hmm.
Actor and character names have been redacted where necessary, and remember that IMDb trivia has not been vetted for accuracy, or I'm going to say, often has shit that just makes no sense, as you'll see in at least one of these.
Okay.
So here's an example for you guys to play, get familiar with the format. Here is your first piece of trivia. The word bear is used once in every episode, usually in a different context. Any guesses here?
Mm-mm. The bear?
The bear is not correct. Second piece of trivia. Ooh. Title character's glasses actually don't have lenses in them, likely to avoid reflections from the set lighting, etc. No guesses. Third and final. Prince guest starred in a 2014 episode named after him. He also made a duet with the star of the show titled Fall in Love Tonight, which premiered on said show. That show is...
New Girl.
Yes, that is a 1 point answer after the third clue. That's how you play. We do have steel mill, so we'll get the steel mill report in a second, but you can only use it after the last clue has been incorrectly guessed due to the format. So, Tara, steel mill situation, please.
Thank you, Dave. Sarah has 3. I have 4. Valued guests have 1 plus Eric's meal for a total of 2.
All right. So let's throw it to Pika and see your order today.
We will start with valued guest.
All right. Pam's in the hot seat, followed by Sarah, then Tara. 27 questions today. 1 gross worth ecological challenge zone right in the middle there somewhere. Are we ready to play the I'm dumb game?
Yes.
Yes. That's it.
All right, Pam, here we go.
Okay.
Your first bit of trivia from IMDb, name the show. The last U.S. broadcast network sitcom to be videotaped. Any guess here? You can guess. If you know, you have no chance in hell. Just ask for the next clue.
Well, I can guess Friends. Let's try that.
Friends is not correct. For 1 week in November 1994, while the series was number 1 in the Nielsen ratings, series star also had the number 1 movie at the box office and the New York Times number 1 best-selling book, Don't Stand Too Close to a Naked Man.
That's terrible. That should have been enough that maybe it's Tim Allen. And that would be then... I didn't say Home Improvement, but it was coming. It was coming.
Home Improvement. Yes, correct. Two-point answer. Sarah D. Bunting. Season 2, Episode 2. The tornado in this episode was, in fact, a real-life event that took place in Beaver Falls, May 31st, 1985. A massive F3 twister touched down just outside of Pittsburgh, ultimately striking Beaver Falls, killing 8 people. The tornado outbreak encouraged the series writers to come up with this episode since the series took place in Beaver Falls. Footage from a twister during that outbreak was used in the episode. I will not reread the clue.
Well, 911 Beaver Falls.
Incorrect. Your second piece of trivia is for Season 5, Episode 8. This episode was supposed to be the pilot for a spinoff starring Kevin titled Living It Up. Anatole was going to be Kevin's roommate, and the landlord, named Bruno, would have had a wife played by Nancy Walker. Bruno also would have had an assistant played by Cheech Marin, and there was supposed to be a loud, overbearing neighbor played by Rose Marie.
Wow.
That's the spinoff. We want the show that spinoff was going to be from, just to remind you here. Also, tornadoes.
Tornadoes. Oh, God. I don't know. Quincy Emmy.
All right, last clue. Maybe a good clue for you. While doing the series, Bob Uecker continued his work as a full-time broadcaster for the Milwaukee Brewers. As a result, filming of episodes were scheduled to accommodate his broadcasting responsibilities. Bob Uecker.
Which one was he on? Fingers crossed that it was Charles in Charge.
If you want to use the steel mill, you have to yell steel mill at this point.
I could steel meal. Chips, did I say it right?
Steel mill! Yell it, though.
Steel mill!
Okay, great. All right, Pam, what's the answer here?
Mr. Belvedere,
it's correct.
It's not the only twister on that show, was it?
Exactly. Jesus Christ, people. What are you even doing at IMDb? Every piece of trivia about Mr. Belvedere should incorporate the fact that the man sat on his own balls. Taras.
Yeah.
Jack Daniel's Tennessee Whiskey is featured periodically through the series, mostly as main character's whiskey of choice on his boat.
On his boat. Miami Vice.
That's a 3-point answer.
Fuck off.
Back to Pam.
Wow.
First bit of trivia. Whenever Brother Man from the Fifth Floor introduces himself, he only holds up 4 fingers.
Yeah, I don't know. This is not enough. He only holds up 4 fingers.
Yeah.
For the Fifth Floor, yeah. I'm guessing, he's saying. I don't know anything with floors other than the Jeffersons.
The song Go Gina from R&B singer SZA Control album was inspired by Gina always seeming so corporate and hardworking and never allowing herself to relax and have fun.
Martin.
You are correct. 2 points. All right, I'm going to read this last one because it's kind of funny. Season 5, episode 15, spoiler. At the end of the episode, the judge ruled in Shanaynay's favor. The amount Tommy had to pay her was $170. After Tommy pays Shanaynay, he tells her to keep the change. Her dream team of lawyers then asks for their cut. Shanaynay gives them each $42.25 apiece. There were four lawyers. That's $169. Shanaynay then claims she only had $1 left over. That totals $170. There was no change to keep.
Oh my God.
Wow. Sarah. Oh, bless.
Yeah. Linda Carter has admitted that she based her performance as President Olivia Marsden on Hillary Clinton. What's the show?
Oh, Jesus. I don't know. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Kyler Lee played Dr. Lexi Gray, who died after a plane crash in Grey's Anatomy. In this series, she is again the sister of a title character and is saved by her from perishing in an airplane crash in The Pilot. She also tells Sam that she had a job as a doctor in Seattle.
Yeah, my mind is emptied of Kyler Lee Iana, so can I have the last trivia bit, please?
Season 5, Episode 9, Goofs. Just before they evacuate Jonathan from Argo, Alora says, "Thank God," when she is relieved to see that Lois and Clark are okay. As a Kryptonian, she should surely refer to their god by name and use the phrase "Thank Rao."
Oh, Jesus. I mean,
Linda Carter, Lexi Gray, Kryptonians.
Yeah. I mean, but it's not Smallville, so... Smallville. I don't know what it is. Smallville?
It is not. It is Supergirl.
Oh, yeah. I actually watched that, too.
Yes.
The final episode of each season features a wedding. The first season finale was aired out of order.
Dynasty.
Alex says, "Can't wait to see your Borat costume in 9 years," as a way to burn her ex-fiance. 9 years after the episode aired, the Borat sequel had just come out, so his costume would have been very appropriate.
Alex. Next, I need the next hint.
Max says he's like a chubby Chris O'Donnell, which in Chicago is like a regular Chris O'Donnell. However, Chris is from Winnetka, Illinois, a suburb of Chicago.
Happy endings.
Happy endings, 1 point. Pam, season 2, episode 14. As of 2024, there is still no IKEA in Cleveland.
No, I don't know.
Second piece, season 1, episode 12. The House of Habsburg is one of the most prominent and important dynasties in European history. In a bid to keep their power, they kept everything within the family. They arrived on marriages that partnered close relatives such as first cousins or uncles with their nieces. As a result, the Habsburg jaw has been long associated with inbreeding due to the high prevalence of marriages in the family in the Habsburg dynasty.
What the hell is happening?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't understand.
I'm pretty confident you watched this show, so that might help you. All right, you want the third clue?
Oh, I just got it.
Season 4, episode 7. According to a February 2008 Vanity Fair piece by Tim Long, former Miami Vice actor Philip Michael Thomas really did wear a necklace with the letters EGOT on it that symbolized his aspiration to win an Emmy, a Grammy, an Oscar, and a Tony. Those are your three bits of trivia. Name the show.
The necklace is familiar, but I don't know what this is. I don't understand this first one. As of 2024, there's still no IKEA
in Cleveland.
This part I don't understand. If you watch the show, it will make sense once you know what the answer is.
Yeah, once I know what the answer is, you'll probably know what the answer is.
I'm going to have to say I don't know.
All right. Anybody going to steamroll it? No. Okay, let me reread the first question for you. As of 2024, there is still no IKEA in the Cleve. If you don't get it off that, you're not going to get it.
Maybe she didn't watch it.
Maybe she didn't watch it. All right, that was Tara?
30 Rock.
30 Rock, yes.
Oh, yeah,
That was in my head for a little while. Uh-oh. But then it just seemed that second one with the jaw was too much. It went it's away from with, comedy for me.
With Pee Wee Herman.
Yeah, no. I just thought I didn't. Yeah, I was like, Bridgerton. I just didn't know what to do.
All right, back to Sarah D. Bunting. During the show's run, Cadillac ran a series of ads for its new mid-sized sedan imploring people to lease a Catera. Then the announcer would ask, who's Lisa Catera? Shortly after, Stacey Edwards joined the cast playing Dr. Lisa Catera, 1997 to 1999.
I remember reading about that in Entertainment Weekly.
Okay. I don't know. ER.
Good guess.
This show featured the first use of the word shit in an American network broadcast, other than documentaries. Spoken by Mark Harmon in an appropriate context. Very little negative publicity resulted.
Well, as long as he said it navally, so I'm going to guess NCIS.
The only Golden Globe win the show received was the performance of credits actor in the 1997 season, which was a funny moment during the award event when her name was announced as a winner and she couldn't be found because she was in the bathroom and had to rush to the stage to accept the award. Robin Williams went on stage, made some jokes, and later presented the award to her. It's not ER.
It's not you know that much. No. Chicago Hope.
There we go.
Oh, really?
Yep.
That's why I said okay. It was a good guess.
It's not ER, but... All right, Tara.
Yeah.
Cloris Leachman did not like her role in the series and often argued with the cast and crew. At the end of the season, she and John Shepard were fired and replaced with June Lockhart and Hugh Riley.
Lost in Space.
John Provost left the series after 7 seasons because he tired of playing the role of Timmy. This made it necessary to fire the rest of the human cast.
Lassie.
Lassie is good for 2 points. To Pam. Volvic French water was the official drink for this sitcom, and characters are often seen drinking from his bottles. Fran Drescher promptly copied this minute detail by having Evian French water be seen in many episodes of the nanny's character's hands. Ironically, Fran Fine is often portrayed as cheap, yet Volvic was France's cheaper alternative to the pricier Evian. Water-based trivia for Pam Ribbon. She
well,
loves
in
to
Volvic,
drink water.
Too. What the fuck, Fran?
We know
Fine.
It's not the nanny.
Fran Fine. We know it's not the nanny. We have one out of the running. Fran Fine. So, was the nanny based on something? That could it be like a nanny? Like, we did Mr. Belvedere.
I think it's just saying it's a show that was on at the same time that they were riffing on.
It doesn't say that, but I think you can probably infer that they were generally from the same period of human history. But I will let you know it's not a nanny spinoff or nanny adjacent anything that I know.
Well, I mean,
the nanny verse.
I don't remember everybody
it's not
drinking
super nanny.
No, it's not super nanny. I can't even think of something where everybody's drinking water. It was just not the style at the time. That's fine. We'll just say Sex in the City. It's not it.
German network RTL showed a German version of the show called Entjob fürs Leben, 1993. Which translates to a lifetime job. The scripts and every single joke of the original 1984 to 1985 season were translated, but it was canceled after 1 season. Entjob fürs Leben was preceded by a British version, The Upper Hand, in 1990, starring Honor Blackman, which fared somewhat better despite also being a direct translation. Whew.
Shit.
Okay, so the translated shows were called A Lifetime Job and The Upper Hand. And the original...
Maud.
You know the show's from the mid-80s. Anyways, here's your last clue. In the episode Car and Driver, it is revealed that Tony's middle name is Morton.
Is it Taxi? Ugh.
What was your guess?
It's Taxi. It's Taxi.
It's not Taxi.
Who's the boss?
Miss who's the boss? Boss?
Yes. It's who's the fucking boss? God damn it.
It's who's the
God
fucking
damn it.
Boss?
I knew there was a nanny. It was the
Why
nanny.
Why can't Tony Danza have characters that aren't named Tony? Messing up the scores.
This trivia game always gets me too competitive.
All right.
I forget.
Sarah, unlike his soap character, who was a loving family man who was married, Mulligan's character on this show was a loving family man who was a widower.
Emptiness.
Emptiness, good for
Hell
three.
Yeah.
Tara.
Yay.
Much yes. like the original film, a lot of season one was shot outside. This quickly proved to be a logistical challenge as the series shot exteriors in Toronto in winter at night.
Crap, I thought I had it, but that's definitely not MASH. Much like the original movie. Okay, give me the next hint.
It was a chicken! The theme song, You're Dead. Want to put a guess here before
yes,
I go further?
Yes, What We Do in the Shadows.
What We Do in the Shadows, 2 points. Back to our guest, Pamela Ribbon. This series led into more seasons of Monday Night Football than any other program during the ABC era, lasting 6 seasons from 86 to 91.
Hmm.
This is the lead-in to Monday Night Football.
For the football.
That this isn't... is
right.
Actually.
Right, that's where I was.
All right, you got a guess or you want the next hint?
Oh, fine. Everybody Loves Raymond.
In the episode Harry's Will, Harry leaves his vintage 1957 Chevy Nomad station wagon to main character. Henry Winkler played the attorney who handled Harry's will. Actually, I'm going to reread that question because I don't think it's going to mean anything to Pam. It'll be kind of funny. Here we go. In the episode Harry's Will, Harry leaves his vintage 1957 Chevy Nomad station wagon to main character. All right, Pam, that's not going to help you. Got to guess here at this
point. No, because it's not MacGyver. Is it MacGyver?
MacGyver, 2 points.
What?
MacGyver.
Sarah D. Bunting, you're next. There is an episode entitled The Hand of God in both the original series and the remake.
One Day at a Time.
Yes. Season 3, Episode 2. In his podcast, Ronald D. Moore, an avowed Seinfeld fan, confirmed that the twist and swirl are references to Season 6, The Fusilli Jerry.
Okay, thank you. Battlestar Galactica.
You are correct, 2 points. For Tara, take us into our score break.
Yes.
Every episode has the sound of ice cubes clinking on glass.
Cheers.
Season 1, Episode 3. Despite claiming to be Jewish, Conway Stern is uncircumcised and consumes shellfish.
Oh no, why do I know that name? Next hint.
Guest stars have included one Oscar winner, J.K. Simmons, and 4 Oscar nominees, Bryan Cranston, Kenny Loggins, Burt Reynolds, and Kumail Nanjiani.
What? Family Guy? I have no idea what this is.
I have a guess.
You steal me
you
a
have one steal me left.
Do I, but am I wasting other people's like
no,
later?
Don't worry about that. No, no.
They just take it.
They get one every week, no matter what.
All right, I'll take it. All right. Is it Mad Men?
Ooh, bad guess, Pam. Bad use of the steel meal, Pam.
Damn
terrible.
It.
Terrible.
No, I've ruined it. Sorry.
Is it Drunk History?
No.
I'm not steel meal.
It is animated. Tara got that much right. It is Archer.
Oh, it's Archer?
Ice cubes and clinking glass.
Oh,
Conway Stern.
The animated Mad Men.
Stern.
Yeah.
Pretty close. Mm. That's right. All right, let's get the scores, please.
Okay, it's pretty close. I have 8. Pam has 7. Sarah has 6.
All right, it's pretty close. I'm going to skip the Gross Source Equalizer Challenge Zone just because we are running long. So let's pile through this.
Yeah, it's nighttime for Sarah.
Nighttime for Sarah. Here we go. Valued guest. That's Pam.
AKA Pam.
Yep. Season 1, Episode 14. Fitz's night-night guns are replaced with the icers, which are what are used subsequently in the series. God, these are so weirdly worded.
Yeah, but I don't know. Keep going.
Season 6 is the only season that doesn't have Hydra in it.
Oh, God.
Also, this show was already guessed previously in this game.
Mad Men.
Oh, God. This next clue is so long. I'm going to see if I can reduce it somehow. Coulson identifies Professor Randolph's pen as a Waterfield 44 with a 14-count nib and a mother of pearl inlay. You don't get it after that. You're not going to get it with all the additional information about the pen, which goes on for 7 times as long as what I just read.
Oh my God, wow.
Wow, pen people.
All right, Coulson is the big clue there. Coulson.
Yeah.
No,
not
Lost.
For Pam.
No, that's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Oh my God. No, I was never.
To Sarah, question 17.
Throw that in the jump street.
Spread Eagle.
Oh, the Spread Eagle.
First show to switch networks mid-season. Fox dropped the series in season 3 and WB picked it up.
Oh, shit.
I'm going to be mad, but I don't know. Next hint.
Season 3, episode 4. The scene in which the Finnertys are playing the board game Sorry, Lily rolls a set of dice and gets a 3. But Sorry is not played with dice. It is played with numbered cards.
Next hint.
Kevin Corrigan's real-life wife is Elizabeth Burridge, a.k.a. Crazy Amy. They married in 2001. They have one child together.
And they just call it the ugly guy. I don't know the answer to this question. Is it Benson?
It is not. Anybody know it?
Grounded for Life.
Grounded for Life is a
surprisingly charming show with Donald Logue and Kevin Corrigan, two Sarah D. Bunting faves.
Tara?
Yes.
The first long-running dramatic show... This is the one I don't understand what they're saying. The first long-running dramatic show ever to have an anthology-style clip show featuring flashbacks of previous episodes.
Okay.
Among the episodes are The Vendetta, The Kidnapper, The Man of the Year, The Revenge,
Of course.
The Murder Game, and The Target.
Man from U.N.C.L.E.
While Daniel Roebuck made occasional appearances on the NBC version, he lost a ton of weight between appearances over several years that went by and effectively allowed him to become a brand new character for the ABC run.
Okay, well, first of all, good for him. Second of all, I don't know. Give me the last clue.
This show is similar to Perry Mason.
That's a trivia.
Yep.
Oh.
The End? Okay.
It is The End. The End is 1957 in brackets.
Oh, I see. Okay. Is this similar to Perry Mason? Is it Matlock?
It is Matlock.
Look at that.
This is question. It is for Pam. Season 6, episode 1. This is the first episode after Farrah Fork was forced to leave the show due to health problems related to her breast implants developing a leak. She got them leaky boobs.
Season 6.
Don't get leaky boobs, Pam.
Yeah.
No.
Farrah Fork with an E.
Yes.
Got a guess here.
Baywatch.
Season 2, episode 5. First mention of Roy's son, RJ, who appear in a later season 2 episode played by Abraham Benrubi.
Ooh.
RJ likes to place magnets on Roy's metal plate in the back of his head, which was installed due to a childhood incident involving his brother and a box of milk duds at a Little League game.
Tale as old as time.
This is such a weird time. Like, nope.
The show's theme music is a shortened version of the Rondo from Piano Sonata in A Major by Franz Schubert. Got that classical theme, Pam.
Schubert.
Oh, God.
Got a theme by the Shoe.
I got nothing.
Anybody know this one? Wings. Nope. That was Wings.
Oh, God.
Wings.
Oh, sure. Wow.
Sarah D. Bunting.
This is very frustrating.
Yes.
The show was supposed to have a 6th season, and it would have explored another method of killing the nanobots inside of Mac and Riley.
The League. I know, that's wrong.
At the beginning of every episode in the first season, Mac makes a symbol out of a paperclip to represent the storyline of the episode.
Numbthreers.
The opening theme to the original can be heard in the first few seconds of the opening credits. Ooh, the original.
Yeah, that doesn't help. Unsolved Mysteries. Why not?
All right, let me reread that clue for you. The opening theme to the original can be heard during the first few seconds of the opening credits.
MacGyver?
2016.
Oh, you son of a bitch.
Wow.
Boo.
Taylor Brongwood.
Yes.
The sixth season episode, The Conversation, has the entire episode and the credit scene both shot in a single take. Because of the episode taking place by a bedroom door, the episode was never popular with audiences, despite the intimate scale and approach.
Mad About You.
Yes, 3-point answer. Ooh, nicely done. Nice. Pam.
Mm-hmm.
In season one, the word fuck was said 437 times.
Shit, because this is a good one for like, The Sopranos is stuck in my head, but I actually think it might be Deadwood. I'm going to say Deadwood. Damn it.
In season three, the word fuck is said 640 times.
Now I'll try The Sopranos.
Yay!
Yes! No, I would have said Deadwood too.
The Wire.
Sarah D. Bunting. Michael Mooney was initially up for the role of main character, but was told he wasn't quirky enough.
Veronica Mars.
Main character's social security number is 987-654320, and his PIN is 3674, spells out D-O-R-I.
Huh. Nope, next hint.
Ken Jenkins' wife, Catherine, graduated from Sarah Lawrence College, which was founded by the great-great-grandparents of Bill Lawrence.
Okay. Hmm. I guess that's
don't overthink
a show
it.
Called...
The show you always get the questions to is...
Oh, it's that show. Thanks for the point. It's Scrubs.
It's Scrubs, yes. D-O-R-I-A-N, Dorian.
Yeah.
That's the clue there. All right. What do we got here? Got a last question coming up.
Okay.
Let's do... Vanessa Angel was originally to leave her show Weird Science and was set to play title character. However, Vanessa couldn't take the flight to New Zealand because she was sick with the flu, and so main star was cast instead.
Oh, no. I don't think this is right, but now it's all that's in my head, so I'm going to say Dark Angel.
Because it was Vanessa Angel?
Yeah.
The majority of Gabrielle's stunts and fight scenes were performed by Renee O'Connor herself, including the backflip from The Abyss, where Gabrielle kicks a cannibal in the face mid-flight, which was done without any wire work.
Xena Warrior Princess.
Yes, 2-point answer there. That's regulation. Mm-hmm. Let's get the scores.
Okay. Sarah has 7. Pam has 9. I have 14.
All right. So Sounds like maybe Tara won.
Yeah.
Tara.
Thank Good you, job. Wrightwood. And that is it for this episode of Extra Hot Great. We sang the Praise Satans of the horror series Hysteria before going around the dial with stops at What We Do in the Shadows, The Change, and Woman of the Hour. Ooh, The Change! Spooky! Don't know what I'm doing anymore. Dave told his version why 21 Jump Street, How I Saved the Senator, should be the first inductee into the Pammon. We crowned Winnies and Losies of the Week. And Tara was the winner of this week's Game Time from Wrightwood. Next up is the Paul Lynn Halloween special for the October Force Inning Pool on Extra Extra Hot Great. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David Teagle, and on behalf of Tara Ariano.
So the priest punches Geraldo in the nose.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Stop that anarchist.
And Pamela Ribbon.
What if they had also put a Star Trek one in there? That's the only way it could have been worse.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right here on Extra Not Great.
Nap time, baby.